Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quilt Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dow, and we're reading my work-in-progress friendship album, 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quilt Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Chapter 8. Sunlight streamed through the high first-floor windows of building number 5, illuminating the 7 industrial sewing machines occupied by Mamie Bett's crew of seamstresses and the 8 cutting tables at the far side of the room, where several women were preparing quilting kits that would go out in the afternoon mail. Florence knew that if the business kept growing, she'd need more machines, but more machines would mean more noise. At this moment, the motors issued a low hum that was almost pleasing, especially as it was overlaid by the women's voices as they chatted while they sewed. But when every morning's mail brought in new orders from New York and Chicago department stores, it was only a matter of time before Florence would have to expand. Of course, adding new machines would give her the perfect opportunity to rearrange the setup, something she'd been thinking about ever since Eula had approached her with several interesting ideas for using building number 5 to its full potential. Putting one hand on Arthur's arm, Florence drew a large circle in the air with the other. "I want you to close your eyes and imagine this room with all the machines gone, replaced by tables draped with white cloths, a little vase of violets on each one." Arthur's eyes remained open. "Where have the machines gone? Are you trading them in for a tea service?"
"Not trading," Florence said. "I'd be moving them upstairs to the 4th floor and adding more to the mix. The 2nd floor would remain as is, the offices and mailing room, the catalog layout room. But I was thinking that the 3rd floor could be a place for meetings and classes and that sort of thing. Quilting bees, perhaps. We'll move the nursery there as well."
"And the 1st floor would become?"
Arthur's tone betrayed nothing beyond curiosity, as though he were an out-of-town visitor and not the building's owner.
"A tea room and a shop," Florence informed him.
"A place for ladies to lunch after a morning class, or simply to meet their friends for a cup of tea. We'd sell fabric and patterns in the shop, our own designs, of course, things you could only otherwise order from the catalog. The fact is, this building has 5 floors and we're only making use of half the space." Florence was prepared for Arthur's objections. She was expecting them. Was she, in fact, even hoping for them? Perhaps a small part of her was, and Florence was at a loss to explain why. Could it be that if Arthur wouldn't get on board with Florence's new plans for the quilting company, she'd know once and for all that things would never work between them? Conversely, if he loved her ideas, would that be evidence that Florence and Arthur would be happy together forever after? "Fish or cut bait," Thomas had advised her last night at dinner, but Florence found herself standing in the middle of the stream, the water rushing past her, unable to do either. She supposed she would just have to keep sloshing along until she knew whether she should cast her line in Arthur's direction.
"I'd like to see your financial plan before I offer an opinion," Arthur told her now. "What you think it will cost to get a tea room up and running, how many more people you'll need to employ. It's an interesting prospect, no doubt, but will it ultimately pay off? Especially given that purse strings are tight and most women don't have money for extras."
"But the economy will rebound eventually," Florence insisted. "I've been reading John Keynes in the Economics Journal. He says that we're headed toward an upswing. To my way of thinking, now is the perfect time to start putting new ideas into action. When the markets rebound, we'll be here, ready to put new dollars into our pockets."
I hope you're right about that. You and Keynes, I should say.
Arthur looked around the room as though trying to envision the scene Florence had described, ladies chatting over cups of tea and slices of cake, their bags filled with fabric and patterns, perhaps a spool of thread or two.
Right now, my concern is that you'll be making an investment in a business you own, but a building you don't.
Of course, one way to rectify that is by marrying me.
Then you'll own both.
He grinned as though to indicate that this was a lighthearted suggestion, and Florence gave a gentle smile in return.
If we marry, it won't be because I need a building, she chided.
You know better than that. However, in order to table the matter once and for all...
The matter of marriage?
Arthur sounded alarmed.
The matter of building number 5, Florence told him.
I'd like to buy it from you. I've discussed it with Thomas, and he'll loan me the money.
Perhaps we should have this discussion in your office, Arthur said, tilting his head toward the women busy at their machines. We don't want to start any rumors.
Of course, Florence agreed. So does that mean you're willing to discuss the matter?
Arthur nodded.
The fact is, I don't know that I'll ever put all 5 buildings back online. The textiles industry is struggling right now. Cotton has been overproduced, sales are down. More of the business is going south because labor is cheaper in the southern states. Like you, I'm investigating other business opportunities.
Here in Milton Falls, you mean?
Florence asked, feeling a slight flutter in her stomach. If Arthur moved, that would decide the matter, now wouldn't it?
Yes, I think so, Arthur said, though you never know what the future will bring.
No, you don't, Florence agreed. She only wished she had an idea of what she wanted the future to bring, the smallest glimmer, a tiny clue. That had been Tuesday. Today was Wednesday, and Florence had thought she might skip this week's bee at Emmeline's. She had a full docket of work today. But Emmeline had called her first thing in the morning and begged her to attend, at least for the first hour.
I'm afraid it might be awkward, Emmeline had admitted over the phone. Maybe there are hard feelings, and I do so hate hard feelings, especially when Cora has made the most delicious pies.
It was difficult to separate Dorothy from Bess in one's mind, Florence mused as she got dressed for the day. They'd always made such a formidable team, and their affection for one another had been apparent from the bee's very first meeting. Honestly, Florence had never seen anything like it. Practically everyone she knew, at least in her own social set, had servants and housekeepers, although they may have had to let a few people go in recent years. But none of them seemed to have the compatible sort of relationship that Bess and Dorothy shared. Florence would have gone so far as to call the two women friends. Of course, money always muddied the water when it came to these sorts of things. Florence and Nettie, for instance, got along famously. But was that because Nettie found Florence as agreeable as Florence found her? Or was it because Florence was Nettie's employer, and it behooved Nettie to behave in a friendly, albeit always professional, manner? Florence would never know. The simple fact was that if Nettie left her job, that would be the end of their connection. Florence went to Emmeline's a few minutes early to help her sister-in-law greet the others, of whom Dorothy was the first to arrive. It was indeed strange to see Dorothy coming up the steps by herself, her husband's truck disappearing down the street behind her. Fortunately, Eula appeared a moment later, her daughter-in-law Elise by her side. Calm, sensible Eula, who clearly understood that this shift in Dorothy and Bess's relationship would cause uneasy waves to ripple out into the group, carried a satchel containing several quilts that she'd retrieved from her sister's house in Homerville during a recent visit.
I thought we might enjoy looking at them, she explained as she began laying the quilts out on the divan in the living room. and I was hoping Dorothy might have some thoughts on the colors. These quilts were made in the mid-19th century, and I'm not sure what dyes were available at the time.
What a marvelous idea, Florence thought approvingly. The quilts would provide a focus for their discussion when the others arrived, a way to avoid any elephants that might wander into the room. She hoped that one of the elephants that would stay in its cage was her new plan for the quilting company. She assumed that all the girls knew she'd asked Dorothy to come on as the manager of the tea room, and she was worried that Bess would think Florence had somehow stolen Dorothy from her. What Florence didn't account for was Edwina's habit of speaking her mind. Most of the time, she found Edwina's manner refreshing, and moreover, she thought it fit in with the tenor of their little group. Perhaps not every secret had been shared over the last year, nor every opinion opined, for which Florence, given her recent romantic history, was grateful. Still, there was a spirit of honesty and forthrightness amongst them. Perhaps there were moments when Edwina could be a bit less forthright, but by and large, her honest observations were refreshing and, to Florence at least, welcome. When Bess and Edwina arrived shortly after Eula and Elise that morning, they brought with them news that snow had been predicted later in the day. "Maybe as soon as noon," Edwina had announced as she took off her coat and handed it to Cora. Turning to Dorothy, she said, "I fear you may have a slippery walk back to your part of town, my dear. Of course, Bess and I would be happy to give you a ride home." Florence couldn't put a finger on why Edwina's offer of a ride had felt somehow rude, a little bit off. Perhaps it was the phrase, "your part of town." Dorothy lived in a perfectly nice neighborhood, but it couldn't be denied that her part of town was different from everyone else's. Only colored people lived there, and not only that, these people would not have been welcomed in Florence's part of town, or even Bess's or Eula's, except in the capacity of workmen or servants. Had they been pretending somehow that Dorothy wasn't colored? Was Edwina like the child in the Emperor's new clothes, pointing at a truth that no one else wanted to acknowledge? That Dorothy was different from the rest of the group in this one rather significant way? Oh, Florence just hated that sort of thinking. Hadn't the past year shown all of them that what lay beneath the skin was what mattered? That they could be friends in spite of their differences? Differences in social class and age, not just skin color. That little phrase, "your part of town," surely Edwina hadn't meant to imply that Dorothy's part of town wasn't as desirable as any other part of town, just farther away. If that was indeed the case, then perhaps the offense was that Edwina's offer served to emphasize that Dorothy was no longer part of Bess's household, which had been Dorothy's decision, Florence reminded herself, but it was like a wound that hadn't scabbed over yet. Best to leave it wrapped in bandages, out of the light for a while longer. Eula came and stood by Dorothy's side. "Dan said if the weather was bad, he'd take his lunch hour a little early to come pick us up. Dorothy's house isn't all that far from mine, after all." Perhaps an exaggeration, Florence thought, as she looked at the lovely platters of finger sandwiches Cora had set out. But it set the conversation back on course. Florence couldn't help but think that there was another line that cut across their little group. Some of them had husbands and others didn't. "It would be nice to have someone looking out for you that way," Florence thought as she considered starting with a slice of cranberry pineapple pie. "Someone who would pick you up or drop you off when the weather was too treacherous for walking." They spent the next 30 minutes looking at Eula's quilts. "Aunt Elizabeth called this block a Dolly Madison star," Eula explained, holding up a quilt pieced in faded pink and blue fabrics. Each block bore a tiny nine patch set in an on-point square, which in turn was set inside an Ohio star. "I wonder if that pink fabric was originally a turkey red," Dorothy said,
running a hand across the quilt surface, though most of those you see have faded to brown.
I had the same thought, Eula replied, and the two women began an expert discussion of the various ways of dyeing fabrics, including making dyes from plants, which Dorothy had grown up doing.
By the time they'd sat down to their quilting, things seemed to be humming along quite nicely, which was to say, almost the same as always. Bess passed on some news to Dorothy about Helen's part in the new school play, and Dorothy mentioned a book that her daughter Hannah had recently recommended and thought Bess would like.
Yes, almost the same as always, Florence mused as she began packing up her sewing things, though sadly, not exactly the same.
Not that anything ever stayed exactly the same.
Don't leave yet, Emmeline exclaimed when she saw Florence prepare to go.
I want to read you girls a draft of my next Farmer's Wife column. I think you'll agree that it's simply marvelous. Florence grinned. Fortunately, there were some things that would never change, and Emmeline's desire to be the main attraction at any gathering was one of them.
I'm sure it's divine, she said, placing her bag on her lap. But read quickly, would you? I have work to do.
Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.